This week on 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour, we're going to discuss some Apple Car rumors and how they have reversed in this last week or two. We're going to discuss, kind of timely, all of the Apple product rumors across 2021.
It's kicking off.
I mean, that would just be a neat episode to do anyway, but this time we have things to back them. That's news. And then some stuff that I think you found with Fitness Plus, right?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, we'll get into it.
Cool. First off, wanted to mention, relevant to Apple, Tim Cook had a tweet, on Wednesday evening, released a statement through Twitter to say, "Today marks a sad and shameful chapter in our nation's history. Those responsible for this insurrection should be held to account. We must complete the transition to President-elect Biden's administration. It's especially when they are challenged that our ideals matter the most." So that's Tim Cook's statement in response to what happened in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol yesterday. So, as the American half of this podcast, there it is. And, next up is a change on Apple's board. So, Mayo, if you recall, Apple started doing this thing called Apple TV Plus, a streaming TV service, kind of competes with Disney in entertainment. And so Bob Iger left Apple's board after many, many years. And that created a vacancy on the board. And this week,
that was about a year ago.
Yeah. And he was also kind of retiring from Disney. Then he came back and, you know, did that a few times. And, but that's Bob Iger's, you know, board vacancy on Apple's board. His seat's open. And someone by the name of Monica, Lozano is now taking that seat. In Apple's announcement, they say that Monica Lozano, president and CEO of College Futures Foundation, has been elected to Apple's board of directors. Lozano brings with her a broad range of leadership experience in the public and private sectors, as well as a long and storied track record as a champion for equity, opportunity, and representation. So there's that. The thing that stuck out to me here is that you're taking, I care a lot about diversity and representation. And so you're taking, it's not an all white board. It's a mostly white board. And you're taking one of the retired white men and replacing them with a non-white male. And female. Not just doing it, non-white, non-male.
Yes.
Yeah. It works better when you're writing it than saying it. but anyway, so Apple speaks a lot about this, but there's been this thing that happens at Apple shareholder meetings where there's been this, policy that gets proposed that shareholders vote on. And then the board either accepts it or turns it down, where they say Apple speaks to, diversity. Why doesn't the board look diverse? And not just the board, I think, but specifically leadership, you know, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And so it always gets turned down. I think it even got turned down so many times that it can't be proposed anymore. But this is taking it without being forced by a proposal in a shareholder meeting, but just, you know, taking action to what you speak about. And then necessarily with a qualified person. So it's good to see in that regard.
Yeah. And like,
I don't know anything about her except the fact that I know Iger left because of the Apple TV Plus overlap with Disney.
Conflict.
Yep. And then this was an opportunity to make a new decision there, and they did.
Yeah. And like, you know, there's different ideas about how diversity should be approached. That's why it's a continuing topic in the world, right? But I think that like the arguments of, you know, the SVPs that are there today, they have company knowledge, they have expertise, they have history. They can't just be like replaced on a whim. Like those arguments less apply to like the board of directors, right? Because you have the SVP and the CEO, and you know, they're like employees that are actually doing the day-to-day work, right? And then you have the board of directors, which is kind of like it's sort of third party, but it kind of isn't. Like it's this other group of people that are meant to represent Apple shareholders and do what's best for the company. Obviously, a lot of the time, unless the company is doing terribly, the board is just going to back up whatever, you know, Tim Cook and the SVPs want to do. So there's some open question about their relevancy, but it's good to see that, you know, they are doing, because you've seen Apple do better diversity in events, right? And they have, you know, way more women on stage than they ever have in, you know, like 3 years ago, just presenting things, you know, being in the public eye. And so being able to do that in like the board levels and, you know, slowly, but, you know, surely, but very slowly on the SVP level as well is great to see, obviously.
Yeah. And that's not to say, you know, I'm a white guy, so it's not to say that there's anything wrong with white males, but, an all, you know, an all male board and then a mostly white board isn't representative of the company, much less the customer base. So
exactly.
It's important in that regard. This week I wrote on 9to5mac.com for the first time in a while. And, I reviewed Belkin's Boost Charge Pro, which is, it was first shown at the iPhone 12 event, right? Where they, they showed MagSafe. And so what this is it's a hovering, well, it's a MagSafe stand. And then it has on one half, and then it's an Apple Watch charging puck on the other half. And then it has a base to it, which is a Qi charger. So you have anything with wireless charging, the Apple Watch, and then the iPhone 12 family, and then later in the future. And it arrived at my house when I was traveling over the holidays, and I opened it up and looked at it, and I was like, I was kind of disenchanted with MagSafe Duo, Apple's travel charger, or, you know, 2-in-1 charger. And this is, you know, we talked before about how you can do the phone or you can and the watch or AirPods in the watch, but not all three at once. And it's laying flat. This thing, the MagSafe puck, doesn't lay flat. It's at an angle where if it's on the counter below or the nightstand beside you, it's kind of angled where you can look down on it. And what I found it's really useful for is when I'm cooking, I have it in the kitchen versus the bedside.
Mm-hmm.
I've been charging my phone in the kitchen instead of the bedroom. And, it's really, really cool for FaceTime. So like I walk in, I put the phone on there on the charger and I do like a FaceTime call and I'm cooking in the kitchen, or watching a video from it or something, but mostly FaceTime because it's like, that's where I'm doing FaceTime. And, put the AirPods, I take AirPods right out of my pocket, put them on the little Qi charging pad, put the watch there. If you use the watch for sleep tracking, then all of a sudden, then the bedroom isn't necessarily the best place to take off your watch and charge it. It might be where you are that isn't the bedroom, you know, so the kitchen's pretty good for that too. So I was really happy with it. And I used the review as an opportunity to kind of share my thoughts on MagSafe Duo. And man, I was excited for it. It appealed to me in use. It's not just the price or the fact that it doesn't come with a charger in the box. It's just the whole product, you know, what we want out of it. 2 MagSafes, no watch, or, you know, something more flexible than that would be ideal. But this is certainly, you know, the form factor is way different. You can't make it compact like MagSafe, but you get way more utility out of it. And I like it.
Yeah. The Belkin thing is like, I haven't got one, but I would describe it just by like looking at it and what it offers. I would say it's functional, but they've like prioritized function over looks or design or sleekness, because it's like, you know, you've got like a Y-shaped tree sticking out of the table where you've got like, well, here's a magnet for this thing and here's a magnet for the other thing. And then you put the, you know, the AirPods on the bottom. Like it works, but it just reminds me a lot of like, you know, everything on Amazon where they have like Trio device chargers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's MagSafe. It's not, you know, and what that means is that you put the phone there and it holds it up, you know, and it charges reliably because it's MagSafe.
You have the other Belkin MagSafe thing, right? The
I was going to say the other thing is the, they call this something ridiculous, like Car Mount Pro or something. It's $40. So that thing is like $150 compared to MagSafe at like $130 plus $20 for the charger. So price wise, you know, it's kind of the same there. This thing is $40. So it's not expensive. But it's a car vent charger, you know, or car vent mount. You put the little clip over the blade, or not the blade, over the dash where it meets the AC vent on your car. And then it mounts. That's how the mount stays up. And then it has MagSafe. And so you put your iPhone 12 on it, and there's no grip or sticky stuff or special accessory to have. In addition, it's just the phone and the mount. If you use a vent mount, then it's a fine replacement, but there's no pass-through charging on it. And when I think of MagSafe, I don't like to think of it as just a mount. You know, if all the Belkin thing did
was hold your phone up,
hold your phone up, and you had to plug in the wire, then it'd be like, I would never recommend that. But because it's also a charger and the stand, then it's actually quite useful. This thing, it's just a stand. And the idea is that you know, lay the phone, you just attach the phone to it and you go. But if you want to charge, you've got to plug in the wire and you've got the wire coming down. And I could very easily see them for something called Pro, you know, charge more for it, but have an option to plug in the wire in this thing, in the mount. And then you put your phone there and it charges and is mounted for your maps and, you know, music control and that kind of thing. But this one, $40, it might as well be $5 on Amazon.
But you wouldn't worry, like, you wouldn't worry about it slipping off or anything. Like, it's stable.
It's for general use. I did accidentally test hitting a curb too hard. And what happens then, and the phone did slide off.
Okay.
Now they also say, don't put this on the vent blade of the AC. And in my car, which is a common Honda Civic 10th generation car, it wouldn't go over just the part that isn't the blade. So I had to use the blade to test it out of, and I was a little afraid of breaking it, but I didn't. But, in one instance, I did hit a curb too hard on accident or at all. and the phone, you know, fell off at that point because it was a pretty, pretty big vibration. But, this thing, you know, if you replace, I think if you're replacing a vent mount, then it's a better vent mount. But if you're looking for a cool MagSafe accessory, it's really a subpar MagSafe accessory.
Anything else that you want to stick in your car, you want it to do as much as possible, right? Like just being a place to hold the phone is because the primary reason people have those mounts is to like run GPS, right? And do 10x10 navigation through their phone.
Things that use battery.
Exactly. The things that use the battery life the most are what you use in the car, like the GPS, because it just churns battery and has to do it on mobile data. And then maybe you're playing music as well or something. Or maybe you're even doing wireless CarPlay, right? All of that stuff uses a lot of battery. So if you're going to have a mount in the car, the convenience of it being a MagSafe thing is let down by the fact that it doesn't also charge.
I mean, because you literally could have a cheap charger that you put your phone in and it mounts. And this didn't try to do that. You know?
Yeah, and there are plenty of like mounts that go in the vent that are also cheap charged and just have a wire trailing out the back. So you just want one of those better MagSafe versions.
And there's cases that have, you know, a magnet accessory so it sticks on. And then there's also just the basic, you know, mechanism of an arm so it grips in. So this didn't quite hit it for me. But I was really impressed with the multi-device charger.
The Moi one.
Yeah, and I know that you don't like the looks of it. In person, I think it looks much nicer. And it comes in white or black. So if you wanted to have a black version, you could. The white version, I usually like black better, but because the pucks, you know, for MagSafe and the watch are white, then having the white version looks better to me. And I actually think, like, if you, you know, the asymmetrical part kind of got to you. I think if you had like a fake, like I've seen like, you know, decorative crystal trees when you mentioned the tree shape too, that kind of have this look to it. So it's not too far off from what you'd see just for decoration.
Yeah, true. True.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know. It's the same problem with the MagSafe too. Like you said, we'd be in a better world if it could just have a MagSafe, two MagSafe Duos symmetrically on the, you know, raised up. Sorry, two MagSafe dock charger thingies on the leaves of the tree. But it can't do that because it needs to charge like the Apple Watch and stuff. So it's left in this like slightly awkward middle ground.
Yeah, and Chris and I chat on YouTube so that he uses the vent mount and that it works great. And it does work for what you expect from it. It works as advertised. That's exactly right. you know, it's just that if you're evaluating it and you think it could be better, I think having integrated charging with it, because you've got to plug in the cable or else you're not using your battery. So you might as well just plug it into the mount itself and then have that power pass through. That's totally possible. And they didn't do that. And then also the design of a vent mount is that you put it on an AC vent. And so if you're in the summertime or warmer weather, then your phone gets cooled down. Like the phone becomes freezing. The stainless steel bands on the Pro are like really cold, but then apply that to the winter. And when you're trying to have heat, and that's not the best place to put a phone, I don't think, you know, some kind of a window mount or dash mount would be better than that. So it's just, you know, I was kind of surprised that this met the Apple endorsement level.
Yeah. Like it's an accessory you could imagine just being out in the world, but it was surprising that Apple like featured it.
Yeah.
All right, let's take our first break and I'll tell you about LinkedIn Jobs. It's the new year and your business has new needs. Make a fresh start for your small business with LinkedIn Jobs. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring remote employees, having the right people on your team remains essential. When your business is ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person for your business fast. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 722 million members worldwide. And just begin by posting the job title, company name, and location. And there's new features in the LinkedIn Jobs platform that make it even easier to get started. You can post a job with targeted screening questions attached, which help to filter the pool and get your job in front of more qualified candidates faster. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills that you're looking for. Your job post is targeted to show up for people looking for a job just like yours. Put simply, LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. And now you can also manage job posts and contact applicants from a single view on LinkedIn.com. Everything's laid out in a single streamlined dashboard. And you can do all of this from your mobile device too. So no matter where the day takes you, you can manage your business needs. So when your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. Visit linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Chinese New Year. There's a new year. There's a new Apple product out this year. It's a new version of AirPods Pro. What's the new version of AirPods Pro?
I wish it was an actual new version of AirPods, because my second gen AirPods are they're 2 years old now, roughly, right? Because they came out in March 2019, and they're doing the thing that all the AirPods do, where the battery starts to degrade. And it says 20% battery remaining, but then it goes to like 15% and they die because the batteries have uncalibrated, the batteries got aging, and the optimized battery charging only came out recently, so that hasn't been able to help. And so now my AirPods are like, well, they still work fine, but you're not going to quite get the battery life that you expect out of them, right? So I'm definitely in the market for new AirPods stuff. This was funny because it is like the first new Apple product of the year, but it's not really, right? It's a celebratory AirPods model that has special an engraving of the ox for the Chinese New Year on
special emoji.
Yeah, because obviously, do you remember, was it last year when they started doing those things where you get the new formats of engravings for free? Yep. You can get these for free, right? You just go on the website and you say, I want an engraving.
Well, you pay for the AirPods, but you get the
engraving. Yeah, the engraving doesn't cost extra. And you can have like the letters in big bold font, or you can pick out these symbols. And it's not the entire emoji set. There's like a limited choice. But for the Chinese New Year, they've done something pretty cool, which is a special emoji. And they've done various different promotions for the Chinese New Year. For 1 year, they did special Apple Watch models, right, with special case and band combinations for the Chinese New Year, with like red bands and red sport bands and stuff. Mm-hmm. They've done promotions, they've done giveaways, they've done all sorts of things. But this year, so
they had a big debate of should they do red AirPods or should they do the Cal AirPods, and the Cal one out.
Yeah, like, although AirPods Max has shown Apple does know how to make AirPods in many colors, that has yet to filter down to the rest of the AirPods lineup. But that's cool. There has also been a flood of just random AirPods chatter, and we can talk more about that in a bit when we cover the quo story. But there was something from Mr. White on Twitter, who's a longtime leaker and photographer, just like weird Apple prototypes and, you know, Apple like little tidbits and little sneak peeks. Definitely reliable in the past. He had a picture of what he claims is to be upcoming AirPods Pro models, and they actually came in two sizes. So there was a smaller one and a bigger one. He said AirPods Pro in two sizes, ? From the current rumor mill, it seems like to me the smaller ones are just going to be like the new base AirPods, and then the bigger ones are the new AirPods Pro, because they every description we hear about like AirPods 3 is they keep getting described as having the AirPods Pro design style, right? Because it wouldn't really make sense for Apple to like have two sizes of AirPods Pro. Like, do people really have that different ear sizes? They need like the equivalent of 38mm and 42mm, but for headphones, like, I don't know about that. But if they're just like, here's the one without active noise cancellation, here's the one with, then that can explain, you know,
sure, yeah,
size differences.
That makes sense. When are you going to get AirPods Max? That's the name, right?
That is the name.
Yeah.
It is a struggle. I kind of want them. I still kind of want them. But they are... I don't know. It's a the M1 situation with the Max, it's like, I'm just can't wait for the 16-inch to come out, right? Then I'll buy that. AirPods Max, I kind of go back and forward. Every day I wake up, I'm like, should I buy them? I don't know. And then I think better of it and I don't do it.
What is ship times done lately? Because I know for a while it was looking like March was as soon as March to April, and then now it was mid-February the last time I looked.
But yeah, I think they're still February at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. And February gets closer as we go. As we so, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, I've reached the phase in AirPods where It's partly that my kids haven't been here, and so there hasn't been the noise. And then my colleagues, some colleagues from Space Explorer were visiting, and then they're not here now. So I'm working a lot less and at home with a noisy environment. But it's still a decision of like which to use. If I'm just going downstairs, there's a coffee shop, or across the street, there's a park, of which I use. But I'm very comfortable with taking AirPods Max out and doing that. It's just kind of whatever habit I'm building. And so I've kind of reached the phase where AirPods Max, they've lost the newness, and then they're just headphones.
Mm-hmm.
But then I put them on and I use them, and I'm like, well, that sounds way better than AirPods Pro. Like, yeah. Insanely. I need to remind myself to use them because, you know, not because I'm not using them, but because when I do use them, I'm still impressed with them, even though they've lost the use them all the time honeymoon phase part.
Yeah, the thing that honestly holds me back is you, because you, a few episodes ago, you're like, so when are you actually going to wear these? And I said, in my office, which is like where I am now, but I have HomePods in stereo pairs, which, like, I wear headphones when I do the podcast, but if I'm just doing my work during the day, I have the music playing through that. So do I really need AirPods Max? Because when I go out and about, I like just being able to slip AirPods in the tiny little Tic Tac case in my pocket. I don't want to carry massive headphones around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not massive headphones. You're not going to carry them around. You're going to wear them, for one. And then they're not going to make them and then replace them in a year and a half. So it's not even like, you know, which phone do you buy? Because next year you'll get a better one.
Yeah.
You're going to want them, and they're not going to get, you know, maybe you'll catch them on sale, but right now you can't even go shopping in your country.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I mean, maybe, but.
Well, when I buy them, I'll let you know, but.
Okay.
I'm holding off for the time being.
Don't let me be the reason you don't buy them, though. Then keep me up at night.
Apple car. You remember the Apple car?
I remember being on an airplane several years ago on the way to Santa Barbara, California. And it was for a Sonos thing, summit, and I was in business class, and they had a TV on in the plane, in the headrest, because it was business class, and CNBC was on, and it had like breaking news, Apple Car by 2020. And this was in like 2014.
Yeah, that'd have been 2015.
Yeah. Yeah, 2015. Yeah. I remember Apple Car. It's the year of Apple Car.
Well, cause then in like Apple Car was like a thing in 2015, and they like everyone, you know, if you don't follow this news too closely, people think that it was just like a fake rumor or something, that it was like, you know, people just made it up and then it disappeared, which isn't really what happened. Like, they were doing it in 2015, and something around 2017, they like, to make the pun, put the brakes on the project, and they realized like, oh, we can't actually make a real car this quickly. Maybe they wanted, like, we never quite got the full explanation of why it like was full throttle. I can't get away from these puns. Was like going full speed in 2015, and then
I'm gonna pull you over for a second.
But like back in 2015, that was when Johnny Ive was still at the company in full force.
Yeah, so I was
right?
gonna say was that there was at least justification of the what, you know, there's always the pressure of Tim Cook has to have the next big thing for Apple, or he's a failure no matter what the state of the company is in. Because it was, you know, Intel Max, iPhone, iPad, you know, or even in that case, iPod, you know, iPhone, iPad under Steve Jobs, and you know, not a quick period of time, but a pretty quick turnaround, you know, in part because the iPad was based on the iPhone, or the iPhone was based on the iPad. And yep. That's why it was so soon after. But you know, there was this pressure from investors of Tim Cook has to have a hit. And then there was the watch, which was, we'll see how it goes. But then I think the car kind of fit that appetite of like for, you know, analysts, it's like, that's going to be, it's a very big thing. Who cares if it's going to be successful? It's Apple being bold. And then there was that period where obviously Johnny Ive had worked for years and years and years, and he was losing interest in design within the constraints of Apple, and the car fed that appetite. That all made sense, but then he actually left, and you know, there's been so many changes to it.
So, and obviously the timing works out because the Apple Watch shipped in 2014. So then, you know, around 2015, they're like, let's start the next big thing. Let's start working on the car stuff. And very clearly, like our old colleague Mark Gurman had a massive report on this on 9to5 Mac at the time. Like they were designing interiors and how the drivetrain would work and how the wheels would work and what would it look like if you didn't have a steering wheel in the car. All this crazy stuff, like an orb for a steering wheel instead of the standard ring.
Everything was being rethought.
Yeah, and you know, Johnny Ive and his team were having a, you know, going to the playground and literally just trying everything out.
On it
Yeah, exactly. Like, they were literally just going all out, trying to work out what, like, oh, let's see what we could do here. And then, you know, Johnny Ive, like, stepped back and he was, you know, starting to leave, and someone practical from the engineering department came around and was like, hang on a minute, we're designing this cool stuff, but A, can we make it for any reasonable price at all? And B, is it actually going to be feasible to ship with like self-driving features anytime soon? And then they were like, oh wait, no, it's actually not. So a bit of inefficiency there in terms of like product roadmap, but then it put it on the back burner for a while. And the reports were that they were still working on their autonomous like algorithms and the underlying technology. So, you know, one day they can revive the self-driving car project. There was like some ideas, oh, maybe they're going to go and license the software to other people. That never really made sense to me, because that's not like, why would Apple do that? That's not their jam. They might as well make the car, right? But just before Christmas, Reuters, you know, fairly respectable publication, just came out of the blue and said, oh, look, the Apple car is back on the schedule. Apple is going all in on it again. And they're going to produce an electric car as early as 2024. And they even had like some specifics on what would make this like so different to, you know, the current electric car market, which is dominated by Tesla, obviously. And you can imagine that any electric car that Apple's trying to make is going to be, it's not going to be like some entry level model thing. They're going to want to be impressive and future looking. And they're going to directly compete against what Tesla offerings, right? Cause they're kind of in the same field. So for years, people have said Tesla's like the Apple of cars, which isn't entirely true because of many reasons, but they, you know, on some, you know, if you zoom out far enough, that's kind of what it looks like. And what Reuters said is that Apple's something that's central to the Apple car will be a new monocell battery design that is Apple custom, that bulks up individual cells in a battery and frees up space so that you can hold more battery models, offering a longer range and, you know, more efficiency on the power itself. It was quite funny when this report came out, Elon Musk was, you know, as he does, he got to Twitter and he was like, this is stupid, this is never going to work. Because one of the quotes in the Reuters article is like, as revolutionary as it was when you first saw the iPhone, wait until you see this car battery. Now, that quote is kind of strange because, like, the iPhone, you know, was a technological revolution, but each of its, like, constituent parts were not out of this world, right? They just took everything together and combined it with a UI that made way more sense than, like,
multi-touch was the biggest factor there.
Yeah, yeah, but even multi-touch had like existed in the world. It just hadn't been done at that size, right? They hadn't like miniaturized it and done it well in a phone. Like, people, you know, the idea of like two-finger zooming, pinch and zooming, that kind of thing. The technology to do that was, you know, bobbed around, and you see it in like sci-fi, you know, stuff, but it never actually been done properly in one package. Whereas the Reuters quote here is like, the specific implementation of the way they make this battery, you know, that's going to change the world when you see it. And like, it's not quite the same thing, right? Like, if I look at an Apple car when it comes out, I'm not going to know the battery chemistry, right? So it's kind of different. But the main point was that, oh, they're actually going to be making a car again. Since Reuters said that, there's now been like back and forth of all sorts of degrees. You've had Ming-Chi Kuo say, look, Apple is working on a car, but hold your horses. It's probably not going to be till 2028. And literally just, you know, a few minutes before we went to air this week's happy hour, Bloomberg's Mark Gurman came out the report saying, yes, it is true. Apple does have a small team of people, again, working on, you know, Apple car hardware, not just software side. So they're designing interiors, they're designing drivetrains, they're designing like even how the wheels work. And it's going to have LiDAR sensors left, right and center, some which might be off the shelf parts, some which are going to be Apple designed. Who knows how much it's going to cost.
And Apple loves LiDAR right now. I mean, the iPad Pro is off, and then the iPhone 12 has LiDAR. And then, as you well know, Elon Musk is like, LiDAR is not the way forward.
LiDAR was like, anything with LiDAR in a car is going to fail. It's pointless.
Right. And LiDAR is, you know, basically lasers to determine distance. And it's pretty easy to understand because it's not that advanced. And you know, you can see the argument of it's a confluence of systems that makes up a more intelligent self-driving system than just LiDAR alone.
Yeah. And Musk's point is that, you know, humans can drive well and humans just have eyes, right? We don't have LiDAR scanners. We just have vision. So his idea is they can solve all of self-driving just by doing, you know, visual analysis.
Yeah. And he comes back into this picture because he responds to stories about, you know, the Reuters story, basically, you know, Apple's making no claims, but it's reporting of what Apple's doing, and that the thinking is that they've got some battery tech that isn't possible. And he really discounts what the battery tech even could be, because, you know, Tesla knows batteries. That's their whole business. Mm-hmm. And they know what's coming in batteries, what's possible, you know, at scale. And it's just met with pure skepticism of, we couldn't be this. We're already doing this kind of thing. And not only that, but then he adds that before the Model 3, you know, the more affordable Tesla electric car was so popular, he reveals that he asked to have a meeting with Tim Cook about Apple buying Tesla, and that Tim Cook did not
green light
a meeting. which was news. I mean, that was
– yeah.
There were all those rumors at the time, you know, and there's always like this poaching war going on where Elon would say that, you know, Apple's car project was like people who left Tesla because they weren't up for the job, basically. And it was like the graveyard.
He was the graveyard where Tesla rejects go. And, you know, proof is in the pudding ultimately. And so far Tesla's been doing well, and their like stock price is the highest ever been and stuff. So, you know, Musk didn't exactly make a mistake there, but you can understand why. I can understand why Tim Cook would not be interested in working with Elon Musk. Like, they're so different personalities. Like, the Musk embodiment is, like, completely disparate from, like, the clean, carefully controlled, you know, reticent Apple branding. Like, Musk is like a maniac, right? He's like a maniac in a toy shop having fun every single day doing all this stuff. Like, there, you can understand why Apple and Tesla would not want to come to terms, really. Anyway, that's like a historical story. The
Musk
Apple car
is not someone that you employ. He's
wants to run the business. Like, ultimately, he wants to run the shop. So yeah, like Apple Car on the Bloomberg report from today basically says that they do have hardware teams again working on producing, you know, developing an actual car, but work has been slowed down by COVID. Apparently, it started last year, but you know, the pandemic has meant that it hasn't been advanced as quick as they want to, and it's probably still at least 5 years out. So, you know, quote says 2028. Reuters says 2024, Bloomberg says 2025, although back in 2015, Bloomberg said 2020. So, you know, it's all up in the air still. But there is enough reports from enough decent publications that, yes, the Apple Car hardware project is back on the menu and they are doing it.
And research and development is an important part of what goes on for a company like Apple. And so necessarily there should be projects like this, even if they don't materialize, because along the way there were all these reports of that what they worked on for the car could be, even if they just have really good self-driving technology that they developed through the car project and they never make their own hardware, that could be a business. I mean, it could be an OS, that the OS is, you know, the intelligence of self-driving cars that are not Tesla. And of course, you know, with 9to5Mac, we also have our colleagues at electric.co, and there's the Electric podcast. So that's, you know, we're not nearly as informed as they are going to be on the state of EVs and Tesla and everything. But I'm sure this came up on their show as well.
So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, check that out. You can take a break.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We are sponsored this week also by ExpressVPN. When you go to the bathroom, you close the door behind you. You don't want to be snooped on by random passersby. So why would you want that when you go online and browse the web? Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like going to the bathroom and not closing the door. Did you know that your ISP, like Comcast or Verizon, knows every single website that you visit? And then they go and sell the information to ad companies and tech giants who use that data to target you. ExpressVPN is the answer. It creates a secure and encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet, so your online activity cannot be seen by anyone else. And it's super simple to use. I've tried it. I've run it. It's so easy. You just have to tap one button and you're protected. It's all it takes. One click and ExpressVPN is active and it runs seamlessly in the background. You can use ExpressVPN on all of your devices. It works on phones, laptops, games consoles, even Wi-Fi routers. So that means that everyone in your home Wi-Fi can be protected even if they don't have an ExpressVPN app installed on their device, because it's installed on the router. It applies to everyone that connects. Enabling ExpressVPN is as easy as closing the bathroom door. You just fire up the app, click one button, and boom, you're protected. Protect yourself today with ExpressVPN, the VPN rated number one by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and many others. If you believe your online activity is your business, not someone else's, secure yourself by visiting expressvpn.com/happyhour today and use our exclusive link, that's expressvpn.com expressvpn.com/happyhour and you can get an extra 3 months for free. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more and sign up and get an extra 3 months for free. Thanks to ExpressVPN for sponsoring the show.
I like the bathroom analogy, Mayo. Do you remember the Apple ad about privacy where it was a guy walks into a bathroom and he's like on the furthest away from the door urinal, and then a second person walks in and like goes right by them. It's like, that's not privacy or something. It reminds me of that. But I was going to say one use of ExpressVPN that I've had is, you may be familiar with the game Pokemon Go. Mm-hmm. And there are some Pokemon you can only get in certain regions of the world by traveling there. And, it's based on your internet, you know, geolocation. And so if you were to change your location that way, you could save, you know, a trip to Australia to get a certain Pokemon, and, just imagine that, but with everything else that you do on the internet, it's pretty, pretty cool stuff. So thanks, ExpressVPN. All right. What's up next?
Ming-Chi Kuo. The prolific Apple analyst who about the same time last year had a great report, which talked about doing a small wireless charger, which turned out to be MagSafe, and a load of other stuff. He is out with his like 2021 Outlook report, covering loads of RAM stuff, not in any particular detail, but just kind of like summarizing the track. Obviously, the first thing is AirTags.
Does he say AirTags in the reports?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which came from 95 Mac.
Originally 95 Mac. in some reports, he says like Bluetooth tracker. In other reports, he just says AirTags directly. Yeah. We've obviously seen the AirTags brand name leaked by Apple, because there was that Apple support video about, what was this, 9 months ago now, where they did, it was just something about using the Find My app for one of the new features in iOS like 13, and the YouTube video just had the little settings screen with the AirTag section in it. So we you know, it's been in development for a long time, or at least it's been leaked for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were all those rumors more recently where it's going to come in like a leather pouch and it's going to be really expensive and, you know, all this stuff. Basically, Apple's version of the Bluetooth trackers that like famously come from like Tile was like the biggest example of like a similar product, right? And Tile has been incredibly vehement in arguing antitrust issues because like they're worried their business can get flattened when Apple makes their own tracker that's nicely built into the system. Like, why would you use, I've said this before on this show, like, it's just inherently true that an Apple Bluetooth tracker, an Apple IM tracker, is going to be more capable than a third party one, because they get full access to the system. They can access the entire of the Find My network, which, you know, is literally every iPhone on the planet, every laptop on the planet, and they're going to be able to integrate with ultra wideband and get exactly incredibly precise positioning information, and be able to, like, the thing we keep seeing in this code is like, you know roughly what room it's in via Bluetooth. And when you get in that room itself, you hold up your iPhone and you get an AR visualization with a little balloon pointing to where the tag is directly in the room. That's something that a Tile tracker is never going to be able to replicate. Apple has tried to like respond to the allegations of anti-competitiveness a bit with stuff like opening up the Find My network to third-party devices. But that's not going to satisfy Tile, because to be part of that program, you're not allowed to interface the product with anything else. So you have to basically only be allowed to be optimized and used with the Find My app, like Apple's app. If you don't want to use off the Tile app, you can't do it. You can't be part of that program. So it's not really an answer to that. And even after all that's been said and done, you're not going to be able to do the UWB stuff, because, you know, at least if I was 14, ultra wideband APIs are not available to third-party developers.
Maybe that's the holdup, is regulation. And
yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, it is a factor. I mean, so a lot of people say, oh, it's probably because, like, Apple doesn't want to release a product for, like, finding things out in the wild during the times of the pandemic. Like, I think we've seen Apple doesn't care less about their product roadmap in relation to the coronavirus, right? They have delays, they make the products better, they have them ready to ship out, and then they release them. Like, there's plenty of stuff last year you could say, this isn't quite right for the current climate, but they ship it anyway. Like,
I didn't tell you I lost my keys recently.
Did you really?
I had to pay $90 to replace a key fob and a mailbox key, and I lost one of two motorcycle keys. So if I lose this one, then I got to like order a real replacement. And I lost a really cool keychain that was on there. And I have like this thing end with, you know, lost and found, but I lost keys. I could have, it's because AirTags. We don't have AirTags yet. And I literally have not bought Tile because of the, you know, two years ago, rumor of AirTags.
Yeah. On the internet. And you're just waiting to find them. Like, because, I mean, the tile stuff is like, what, $20, $30, $50. I think based on all the rooms we've seen so far, the Apple tag is going to be like $70, around that price level. But if it costs you $90 to get your keys swapped out, then maybe it's worth it to put them on there. Like, yeah. That's if it actually helps find them. Like, so, because the Bluetooth trackers, they don't have GPS. They don't have mobile data on them.
If it just said like the last location, you know how your phone does that?
Yeah.
And then I would know what state it was and what looked like. I would know, was it this car ride? Was it this part of the trip? Was it before I even left? It would have been useful.
Yeah.
I have to imagine.
Because like the main reason that Tile has kind of risen above the rest of them is just because they've got that critical mass. They've solved the chicken and egg problem. Yeah. And so if you walk around, you randomly file a Tile sitting on the floor, odds are you know to open the Tile app and find the owner, right? If you just get this, you know, unbranded tracker from Amazon or any other place on the web, you're not going to access the Tile database. But you're going to have like access to a billion plus nodes in this Apple Find My network when the AirTags come online. Like, it's going to be, you know, an interesting proposition. And there is the problem though that someone has to find the tag at some point for you actually ever to get your thing back. Like, if you drop your keys in the bottom of the sea, you're never going to find them again, right? And you won't even know that they've been dropped from the bottom of the sea because the tags don't have like mobile data or anything like that. They only get recognized when they're in the vicinity of another device that talks the Find My protocol and is connected to the network, right? So if you leave your
keys, my keys, I would have, it wasn't the bottom of the sea. It was where people would pass by.
You know what I'm saying though? They're not going to be like, you know, they're not a panacea. They can't solve every problem.
Well, even something that can, you can track at the bottom of the sea. So a friend of mine lost his Apple Watch while wakeboarding over the summer, and it was a cellular model, and like he knew exactly where it was. He just couldn't go down there and get it at the bottom of the water.
Have you seen that YouTube, that viral YouTuber who like wears diving equipment and dives down and retrieves Apple Watches? That's quite funny.
We gotta recruit him.
Yeah, they need that for the, he's gonna have a rocking business when the AirTags come out. Find every device I've ever got. But I'm excited for AirTags. Like, I'm not gonna buy loads of them. I'll probably buy one and put it on like, you know, my keys or my bag or my laptop bag or something like that, and then I'd be done with it. One thing that I've just realized talking about this is that, you know, iOS 13, they added like Find My support to the iPad when you go offline, or the laptops, right? So even though the laptops don't have cellular data, they can ping nearby stuff that is also connected to the thing. And I don't feel like we've heard many stories of people who are like, I lost my laptop, but thanks to the Find My network, we found it again. So like, and that's kind of the thing that's similar to like the Apple Watch saved my life stories. You feel like I would think would come up more than they do, but they don't really. So I don't know what that says about the
effectiveness. Wait till their tags though.
Yeah, hopefully with AirTags, it's more to the fore. but hopefully, I mean, my biggest hope is that they do actually ship at some point in 2021, because I can't bear being able to talk about these for another year without them actually being out.
When I lost my keys, I didn't think, I wish AirTile were here.
AirTiles, yeah, AirTiles.
To prevent that. AirTags. But now I can't get that connection on my head. So every time I think of AirTags, I'm going to think of the $90 I'd spend on the replacement of my keys.
Elsewhere in 2021, Quo says to expect, and this is very vague, but Quo says Apple release some sort of augmented reality device. He doesn't specifically say glasses, although in like last year's reports and previous reports he has said specifically a glasses headset type product. Obviously the AR glasses has been long rumored, probably as long as the Apple Car stuff, right? But the glasses feel closer to shipping. I mean, I still struggle with the problem of like, if you have no logistical limits, you can imagine cool things that AR glasses in your face could do. Like, for instance, navigate around a city, they just put the arrows on the pavement and you just follow them. But when you like reel it back to the real world, I still think you're going to have issues with like battery life or just performance. Like, all the current headsets on the market, the VR, the AR headsets, they all suffer from like lag issues. They can't update the screen fast enough, because if you're trying to compete with your eyes, you need to have a really fast, high refresh rate display to be able to not like it. So your brain can like pass the signals properly and it like makes it seem like it is real, right? And you don't see the weird effect where it's like an overlay over the top, or it makes you feel motion sick and stuff like that. And, you know, powering a screen at that high refresh rate constantly drains a lot of battery life. So you end up with these like ones that you carry around with that you can only use them for a few hours, and then you have to put them back to charge, or the actual graphics they project into the world aren't that impressive, because they, you know, can only do very basic rendering. They've only got small graphics chips inside them. So then your brain's like, that's not impressive. It's just like a polygon floating in midair. Like, I still think we haven't quite got over that precipice yet. And, you know, maybe Apple can surprise us with something insane that really pushes the boat out. But if you just look at the market, I'm still yet to see like an AR glasses product or an AR headset product even that can actually deliver something meaningful that you could actually use in a day-to-day life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think that the category is expansive enough that you could find a number of use cases that even Google Glasses did with their enterprise version. But then the challenge is then, you know, I think that's easy to do, or possible to do at least, but then finding mass appeal
at a reasonable price point, because that's the other thing. These things are really expensive to make. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also balance that with the feeling of not always being connected and on, you know, things in front of your face, you know, your phone in front of your face, literally. So, it's a challenge. we'll see, you know, it's a challenge on multiple fronts, not just the technology, but also the use case. But obviously Apple loves augmented reality and AR kit but that's another thing, is if we judge based on what they're doing right now with AR kit, it's still very specialized, you know, cool demonstrations, but practically, I don't know that there are like AR mega fans out there.
Like stuff you can do day in and day out that's actually useful.
Yeah.
A quote also says that Apple will continue the transition to Apple Silicon in the Macs, of course. It's come on 16-inch MacBook Pro. Still rumors of the latest quote report said that he's going to have redesigned 14-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pro models this year. So there'll be slightly bigger screens on the low-end MacBook Pro, and then the same screen on the bigger one. But as well as, you know, featuring super powerful Apple Silicon with good performance, long battery life, there's also apparently going to be exterior design changes as well, which, you know, gravy on the cake, icing on the cake. That's what I'm looking for. I've got some weird analogies on this episode.
You do.
Yeah, I don't know where this is coming from, but hey, it's 2021. We got to go with it.
When I was in South Texas recently, everything came with like mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah.
It's like I think it was a regional thing, but yeah. Anyway,
I'm hoping for like a black
icing on the cake.
I want black MacBook Pros. That's what I want. Like,
okay.
I'm done with space gray. I'm done with silver. All black.
Are you done with the graphite? Yeah, because it's the year of graphite.
I mean, graphite is kind of space gray-ish.
It's space gray. Like, it's just a different shade of space gray.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it's graphite,
it's space gray with a less cool name.
Yeah, it's like space gray before they branded it. It's graphite. Yeah, like I'd love it if, like, it doesn't. To be honest, if the 16 MacBook Pro came out and it looked exactly like the one the 2019 MacBook Pro, but it had an M1 chip in it, happy as Larry, because those things are
another analogy.
Fantastic. That's an idiom, I believe.
You're an idiom.
Like if all it came out with was a 16 MacBook Pro as is with an M1X chip, which meant that you could, you know, connect to more displays at once, get slightly higher RAM and better GPUs, right? I'd be so pleased, because I'm sitting on this 2016 one. I'd be so pleased if it went to a MacBook Air, as long as it had more RAM in it. So anything they can do on the MacBook Pro on the Apple Silicon side that goes beyond just upgrading the chip from the Intel version to the, you know, their architecture, mm-hmm. bring it all on. Webcams, that, you know, if they want to make the webcam better too, they can throw that in there.
This next topic, what do you have next for us?
Yeah, so just rounding up, because, you know, quote can talk forever, but mini LED is apparently still on its way. That's been another thing that's been like rolling over for years and years and years.
Yeah.
The 12.9-inch iPad Pro is supposedly getting mini LED this year. We'll look out for that. And then AirPods, Quo says, he's basically repeating what you said before, that there's going to be like AirPods Pro Lite will replace the non-Pro AirPods in the lineup. They'd feature design that's similar to the current AirPods
SE.
Pro.
It's SE, right? It's
maybe AirPods, AirPods Pro SE. And so they'd be, unfortunately, they'd be in-ear design, and maybe likely include different ear tip sizes in the box so you can switch them out. I'm not so keen. I want new AirPods, but I'm not so keen on in-ear style. So we'll see how that one goes. But
okay.
The only thing that Quo didn't really mention in this report is any talk about the iMac redesign. So, but he comes out with new reports on a 2 weekly basis. So we'll see
that's for the best. GaN chargers, is that gallium nitride? Have I almost remembered what it's called?
Yeah.
Cool. Nice. Do you remember, last year we're talking about a late end of the year call report about new chargers?
Yes.
New charging accessories. And I think your side was why, you know, they're going to do a new brick. And my side was, well, they're going to do, you know, multiple versions of like MagSafe Duo. And I think this comes down on the side of bricks. This is what he meant by that in that report was.
Well, technically they did come out with new chargers last year because they came out with the 30 watt charger.
Yeah.
That was, and the 20 watt charger on the iPhone, right? Because it used to be 18 and now it's 20.
Yeah.
So
I think since then though, I think there was a report about what's coming this year would include new charging.
You know, yeah, there was.
If it was bricks or accessories, but
right.
You said bricks and I assumed accessories, and now we've got this GaN charger story, and
which comes from DigiChime, so it's not as solid as like Quo stuff, but still.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think and connect, when you relate it to Quo, then it's like, well, it probably is bricks and not more accessories. You know, maybe it's both, but if there are new bricks, then it could be the first time we finally see GaN, which I've used. The technology inside is what's interesting, but how you benefit is you get higher power watts and a way more compact, case. So the actual overall footprint of the charger can be much more like what you see in like a classic 10-12 watt iPad charger, but it can power, an iPad or a MacBook that needs 30 watts or more. And so Apple's not done that yet. They sell GaN chargers to the Apple Store from,
Anker.
Yeah. But they don't make one yet. And it's as they charge a lot of money for their power bricks, it's a big head scratcher of why aren't they using the latest technology when they're using premium prices?
Yeah. And the answer is probably like scale. Just the fact that Apple has to make so many of them.
They had to take them out of the box first.
Like they just back. Have to, like gallium nitride is like, there's a reason third party manufacturer can sell them, but like Apple can't, which is fair. So if they can start actually shipping gallium nitride chargers in their own products, that's fantastic because they're literally, you can either have a smaller charger with the same charging speed, or you have a bigger charger that's even faster, or you have the same size charger that's even faster, right? And in most cases, you get the best of both worlds. You get a smaller charger that's also faster than all of the Apple chargers in the lineup. But you know, economies of scale, mass production, that's hard. That's something that's, you know, a problem for Apple specifically. Obviously, in the meantime, they shouldn't charge exorbitant prices for their old chargers, but hey ho, that's Apple Incorporated for you.
Yeah. All right, let's think of our last sponsor.
Yep. Our final sponsor this week is Remote HQ.
Cool.
So, for remote work in 2020, 2021, everyone, maybe 2022, who knows how long this is going to go for. Everyone's looking for the new hotness when it comes to working from home and collaborating with your team. Document apps, video chat, messaging, all that stuff. Well, that's where Remote HQ comes in. Remote HQ combines video conferencing with a collaborative visual workspace. It's like screen sharing taken to the next level for the best virtual meetings. And you can easily make any website into a multiple user collaboration workspace that anyone can click on, type, interact with. You could put up like a few web browser windows, perhaps load up your work docs from Google Docs, and everyone in the room can act on different files and discuss them at the same time. You can rearrange the windows however you like. And if you just need to concentrate and talk, you can focus on a face and temporarily hide all of the other distractions. And in addition to all of this, everything that you do in a workspace is automatically recorded. So notes are saved for later review and everything's searchable. So you can quickly find your stuff down the road. If you're done for the day, you can save your stay in one click and come back tomorrow to the exact same place and carry on your work with your team seamlessly. Create your best virtual office environment with Remote HQ. The best part is there's no need to download special apps. Remote HQ runs in the browser with enterprise-grade security. So go to remotehq.co/happyhour for a free trial. That's remotehq.co/happyhour. And when you're ready to launch, use code happyhour for 3 months free. remotehq.co/happyhour and use promo code happyhour.
All right. Thanks, Remote HQ. So time to walk Apple Watch. This is a discovery you made. Well, tell me about it. What is this?
Yeah, so this is initially tipped off by our good friend Chaos Tian on Twitter, who spotted the existence of the setting on iOS 14.4 beta. This has actually been in the betas for a few weeks and just gone unnoticed because it's
sure.
Like the actual feature, basically, there's a new setting in the worker app options, either in the what app on the Apple Watch itself, like the settings app, or in the companion watch app on the iPhone. And the feature is time to walk, add new, and the toggle is add newest workouts to watch, and you can turn it on and off. The actual setting is completely non-functional in the betas at the moment because there's the feature, like the actual workouts aren't available. So you can switch this thing on and off and nothing happens, which is part of the reason why it's basically gone under the radar because there's no actual functioning behavior. There's no like new UI in the workout app or anything yet. But the description of the setting, the little subtext, gives you a pretty good explanation of what it is. And at 9to5 Mac, we did a bit more like code searching in the strings and to basically back up the findings. And so basically the setting says time to walk workouts, and time and walk are capitalized, so it's like a brand name, right? Time to walk. Time to walk workouts are downloaded when the Apple Watch is connected to power and near your iPhone. And when workouts are finished, they're automatically deleted. So, you know, a typical workout on the Apple Watch has no data associated with it. You just start the workout and you're done, and then it saves the, you know, the workout record to the phone or on the device, right? But there's no like massive file that has to be downloaded in advance. What this setting says is that when your watch is near the iPhone, it will, similar to how it syncs music and podcasts, right? It will download a big file, put it on the watch that you can then use when you actually go for a workout. And based on code findings, this is being referred to as a workout guided walk. So essentially, most telling part of all this, right? Because on its own, you can kind of see, like the description settings kind of hints at the idea that this is, look, some multimedia project that's got to come across the device, because otherwise why would it need the iPhone and need to be connected to the power? And then, you know, it's not going to be video because it's an Apple Watch, so it's probably audio. But the biggest hint was in the code findings. It literally says, like, this feature is referred to as workout guided walk. So at some point soon, we believe that the Apple Watch is going to add guided audio workouts to the workout app, which is a great feature. We were talking about this when Fitness Plus launched, right? Like, it's great that they've got the videos and they've got the nice studio, but what you really want to do is be with your AirPods and your watch on the go, and when you're running or walking, you know, get motivation and get encouragement. And this feature sounds like exactly that. It is, based on the code investigations we've done so far, it's not 100% definite this feature requires Fitness Plus, but there's definitely like a Fitness Plus aspect to it. So whether they're going to like say all the workouts, all the guided walk workouts are behind the Fitness Plus paywall, or maybe you get like a few for free, but if you want like ones every 2 weeks or whatever, you have to get the subscription. But there's some Fitness Plus connection, but it's not, we're not sure yet if it's like Fitness Plus is required, which would be like how Apple News Plus audio stories work, right? Like you have to have a subscription to use the feature, even though like the rest of the Apple News app shows off the feature, even if you can't use it. But I think this is great. Like, and if they have the same quality as they do the studio workouts, it adds some nice variety to the fitness app, to the Fitness Plus service, right? Because everything so far is done in the studio. If you want to do something out and about, Apple can't help you, but it makes perfect sense. You have like a nice, you know, coached workout. You pick like a time, like 20 minutes or half an hour. You go out and walk and you get like coaching in your ear. Maybe you get some nice synchronized music. Like, it's hard to complain about. It sounds like a cool feature. And the way it's branded as time to walk, obviously that has direct correlations or a direct parallel to like the existing time to stand notifications. You know, like the thing the Apple Watch has had since the beginning where once an hour, it's like, you should get up and walk around for a little bit. And this is time to walk. So instead of standing, it's walking. But you can, maybe they're going to brand it like once a day, you should go out for a walk and you can use the Fitness Plus workouts to help you do that or something.
Mm-hmm. Ah, cool. Huh. It's just, I mean, we'll know more about it when it gets ready, but it indicates that it's going to be sooner than like, you know, next big major software update release.
Yeah, like if it's in the 14.4 betas, then it's probably coming out within a month or two.
Yeah, and if it is tied with Fitness Plus, which would make sense, then that could also give us a hint of how often they plan on updating the service, not just with new content, which is weekly, but with new features, which we would hope would be more than once a year.
Yeah, and I should shout out, someone on Twitter actually mentioned that there's a reference to audio workouts in the Fitness Plus privacy section. So, you know, when you go in like the privacy pages, it says the data from your walkout video and audio workouts will not be connected to your identity or something. Like,
nice.
So, yeah, there's a reference there.
Cool. All right, let's end this week with some questions and answers. So earlier this week, I asked some of our friends on Twitter to use hashtag Ask925 and send us some questions. And we've got some here that we're going to address. Really quickly, I want to address some questions that were in the chat during this episode. So our friend Wade, who is I know him as a Dalmatian wrangler. He has beautiful Dalmatians. He asked, what's the top Apple product of 2020 that we would return? And the reason I want to answer is because I know, although it's not a hard one for me, it would have to be the iPad Air.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. Although I will say, so I have a new Canon EOS R6 camera that I bought recently, and I've learned to shoot manual, and know what settings I can control to change the way the picture will come out. And so then I'm shooting in RAW in that way and not JPEG. And so I had a bunch of pictures. I uploaded them to Photos on the Mac and they didn't show up. And I was like, what's going on? And they were Canon's newest version of a RAW file. And some versions of it are supported on Mac. The current one, I couldn't have support without installing other software yet. So I just went to Lightroom and I put the raw files in Lightroom on the Mac. And then I looked at them on the iPad and I was like, maybe I'll be one of those people who use the iPad for not just for TV, but for, you know, actually editing pictures with the pencil for precision and everything, you know, kind of as intended. And it all began with this camera, you know, raw file format isn't supported on Mac OS, yet. So without using Lightroom and then it was on the iPad as well. So, maybe I will become one of those people, but you know.
So if you had to pick, you'd say the iPad.
Yeah.
I can answer this question by saying I basically didn't buy any Apple products in 2020, so I've got nothing to return.
I know it.
Because I got to the end of the year and I was like, let's look at what I've paid Apple for this year. And I bought the HomePod, obviously, the HomePod Mini. But I've managed to stay out, and I don't want to return that. I think it's great. And so I have managed to stay unscathed because I didn't buy the iPhone last year. I didn't buy the iPad update. And I'm waiting on the laptop. Obviously, if they'd have done an M1X MacBook Pro last year, I'd have bought it already. But
sure.
Yeah. But basically, all I paid Apple in 2020 was, you know, the services subscriptions until I die.
Do you think the first 2021 keynote from Apple will be March 16th or 23rd?
That's very precise.
Why those dates?
I think there was some Twitter leakers who were like quoting dates and stuff.
Because like, I was going to say like March or... or June.
Yeah. I assume there'll be a March event. I mean, the thing is, would there be a video event, or would they just have press release with product releases, right? Like, that's always the question.
Yeah.
Whether it's 16th, 23rd, my opinion is if we were in the world where events were happening in person scheduled, then maybe you could make some argument that yes, Apple has to plan this out ahead enough. So okay, they already know if it's the 16th or the 23rd, for instance. Mm-hmm. But in the age of virtual events, they can record it any day in the beginning of March and release it any day they choose, right? Like, they can't be set in stone at this point in time.
Yeah, what you care most about is not when the first event will be, but when the 16-inch MacBook Pro release will be. What part of the year that will be?
And that could be March. It could be June, but it's probably going to be like September or November again.
Okay, let's look at someone that we've received from Twitter.
Yeah, so hashtag Ask925. Leo Barnes said, what was the most surprising Apple product or service of 2020? I guess you have to say like Fitness Plus, because it kind of came out of nowhere. Like, obviously we did have the leaks of it earlier in the year, but what they ended up shipping was, I think, more fully fledged and definitely not quite... Like, it took me, when they announced it, I was like, wow, that's actually cooler than I thought it was going to be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would have to say Fitness Plus, because that is something that they could have done a long time ago, and they waited until now to do it. And you can kind of get an idea based on when they started hiring the instructors of when they were even putting that part together. And it's not more than a year's time that they went from, we're hiring the talent for this, to building the service out. And what they've done is we talked about it a few episodes ago, but the 1.0 version of Fitness Plus is really good. And by having it in the bundle, it makes it a no-brainer too. If you have the Apple One Premier bundle, you don't have to think about, do you want it or not? You just think about, when are you going to use it? If you're going to use it. So I agree with you.
Yeah. Leo also asked, what do you think is Apple's next big move in the era of services? I would hope it's like acknowledging that families exist. So you can have like shared photo libraries and, you know, do fitness plus workouts with your family at the same time and, you know, more integration on that lines. Because they've done it in like Apple Music with the friends are listening to stuff, which is nice. But the biggest thing is for like iCloud. I have so much iCloud storage that I'd love to be able to use it more. So whether that's like being able to back up all of my family's Macs through like an iCloud time machine, or being able to have like, you know, the central photo library stuff. Because right now we, you know, everybody in the family has like 80% of everyone's photos, and we really just like everyone to have the same bucket, and we can't do that right now. That's what I hope is going to happen. What I think is probably going to happen is random little additions that they can stick on like Apple One Premier to make more people buy Apple One Premier, basically. And similar to how they have Fitness Plus, like it is a standalone service, but it's like, you know, they want this, it's mainly there so you can buy like all together in Apple One Premier. Podcasts are probably going to form a part of that. I'm sure they can come up with some other stuff. Like if Fitness Plus hadn't come out, they could almost have audio workouts as like a completely separate service, right? Like maybe it's like Fitness Plus workouts don't include audio workouts by themselves, but they, if you get the Premier bundle, then they do, or you have to pay a little bit extra. Like I'm sure they're going to do more stuff like that because that's how you upsell people to the higher level plans.
Sure. I was going to say podcast because it's the one service that we know has been in the works for a while and hasn't been announced yet as a, you know, a podcast originals and that kind of thing. What I'm going to hope for though is something with audiobooks and even, you know, Apple Books, because that's an obvious service that's left to Techwell is, you know, an Audible equivalent, and they haven't yet.
And they've definitely been making hires, right? They've got new leadership for that division. The person who used to run Audible now runs like the iBooks division. So
yeah, surely it's not just to have the status quo keep going, but it's to do more things with that app.
Yeah. And like Audible isn't even like a full subscription. It's basically like, You're just pledging to buy a book every month.
Credits per book, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like a stream it all, or here's 500 books you can stream. It's like basically every month you buy a book and then you keep it forever. So maybe they can do something like that. Because yeah, I love audiobooks, but apart from Audible, there's no competition in that space.
Right. Yeah, I mostly buy them through Apple Books. Expensive.
And as it stands today, you're vastly overpaying for that, if you see what
I mean. Yes, they cost way more than even any other version of the book.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Nicola Hansen Turton asked, do you think the TV app on the Apple TV box will become the main screen on TVS 15? Obviously, I'm hoping for a new Apple TV hardware because that's long overdue too. Do I think they're going to like basically get rid of all the apps and just have the TV app? No, because... the main thing you do on the Apple TV is watch TV shows, but they have problems because lots of apps or lots of content providers don't want to integrate with the TV app, namely Netflix is the biggest problem. And part of the appeal of the TV box is the other stuff you can do, because if you just want to watch TV shows and Apple TV Plus shows or iTunes content, you can just use the integrated app on your smart TV or the app on the games console, right? Like they've got the reason to keep the box are going to be like the arcade games and Fitness Plus, and the fact that you can get your iCloud photo library on the TV in a nice way, or Apple Music. Like it's going to be really hard to basically just like squish all that into like a TV app interface. Like I think they're still going to have some sort of app metaphor going forward.
Yeah, what I would see, so the reason against doing it, and I think it's still, is it the default when you set up an Apple TV is that the home button goes to the,
the TV app? And I turn that off every time.
Yeah. But you know, if you did things like you put an app library in the TV app where you took the current iPhone model, you know.
Oh, great. You made the TV app even more confusing.
Yeah. But I mean, you've got, you know, it would be a tab in there and it would basically be the home screen that you see, but it wouldn't be the starting point. But not just to make that change as you do now, as where it's just the default, but to do it because you enhance the overall TV, Apple TV app screen that you begin with. You know, put arcade as a dedicated tab in that, and have an arcade section in that, and then. You know, basically they took the iOS 8 home screen and they made that the tvOS home screen, and it hasn't changed, hasn't like caught up with even anything that they do on iOS home screens. Instead, what they've done is they've defaulted to having the TV app as the main screen. The benefit there is that the TV app, what they do there, if it's not too complex, it can then be mirrored on Roku and Fire Sticks and all those other boxes that have the app. You wouldn't have the app library in that case because there's no app library to be had. But I think just to redesign, like a rethink of that would be neat, because the current way it works is, it's stuck in the iOS 8 days, even in terms of like how you, which directions things are laid out.
Yeah.
And it changed kind of rapidly after introduction, and then it froze. And
yeah, they added like folders and dictation and like loads of stuff like within 6 months of the original app. This is like 2015 timeframe, right? And then it just kind of stuck there for a while.
Yeah.
Like last year, they didn't even do new screensavers.
Yeah, App Library would be good. They did let you pick what type of screensaver you have, though.
That is true. Right. 13 Pool said, do you think Apple should focus on not breaking existing functionality? For example, Safari iCloud Tab Sync has been broken for 2 months now. So not breaking existing functionality before adding new features. This is the question, like, should Apple prioritize bug
it's
fixes
timeless.
Over new features?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have also had the Safari Tab Sync problem, by the way. Like, it's always hard, because how long are you going to spend not breaking existing functionality before people want new features? And then you implement new features, and then you're going to inevitably break some sort of existing functionality in one way or another. And I'm sure Safari Tab Sync being broken does not apply to every single person on the planet. It just applies to, you know, 5%, 10% of the population, but that's enough for everyone to be mad, right? Understandably, because it's a feature that used to work really well and now is kind of iffy. And part of that's like, the causes are if, like, some, like, for instance, iCloud Tab Sync, in the old days, it would just store to your iCloud account and sync. What they do now is they do it end-to-end encryption. This was introduced not last year, I think the year before. So the syncing process for the tabs is way more complicated now than it ever was before. So there's more opportunity for there to be problems and bugs and glitches, right? It does mean you get better security, because now even Apple doesn't know what tabs you've got open. But to implement end-to-end encryption stuff, it's more complicated. So that might be, there's probably related somewhere along the line where like Big Sur's decryption got a bit messed up, and so now you don't get tab sync or something. So that probably explains that one specifically. But in the general scheme of things, you have to do a balance, right? Like, they, you know, in once in a blue moon, you can do like the iOS 12 year where they basically did nothing and just did like bug fix and performance improvements. And that was well received, but you can't do that like every year in a row. People want new stuff. People want new stuff to do. I think personally, as we stand in the beginning of 2021, like thinking back across 2020, Apple had a pretty good year in terms of software reliability. Like, I can't think of too much stuff that went haywire. And especially nothing dramatic. Like, and they shipped an entire architecture transition on macOS. They shipped a whole new UI on macOS. They shipped widgets in iOS 14, like a pretty big revamp of the home screen. So they did pretty big feature improvements without causing notable instability, I'd say. So I think they did a pretty good job. Yeah, there are obviously all these edge cases, especially when it comes to iCloud stuff, because like, everyone can have random iCloud bugs that pop up here left and right and center. And I'm sure for the engineers, they'd want to fix the problems, but they can't reproduce it, or they have problems reproducing it, or it's like random. And there's so many different factors at play. Like, the Apple ecosystem is so much more complicated now than it was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And every single time you add a new thing, it's like a multiplicatively more complicated, the whole system. And fixing problems across the board is going to be really hard. Obviously, everyone would always want them to fix more and more bugs that ever exist. Are you ever going to actually achieve that? Unlikely. So where do you balance the two? It's really hard. Like, this is what like Craig Federighi has to decide every day. Like, are we going to do this feature? Are we going to do this whole new product? Are we going to make an Apple car? Or are we going to dedicate the engineering resources to software stability and you know, our existing platforms? And it's really hard to say where that balance should be.
Yeah. What I would say is that, on one hand, there's this myth that there even is a new version update that strictly focuses on past, you know, improving past things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Snow Leopard gets that reputation. But
the first version of Snow Leopard, like 10.6.0, was not super stable. It only became stable by the end.
Yeah. And so that brings me to the next point, which is what the balance could be. What I would propose if I were doing this would be, right now we have new versions. We go from Catalina to Big Sur because the year is up and it's time for the next thing, not because Catalina is so good that now we're in a good place where we can do something big and different with Big Sur, And if you don't want big and different yet, you just stick on Catalina. I think people are a little bit unhappy when Catalina is as good as it's going to get. And then you've got to go to Big Sur and risk things breaking to experience future bug fixes and that kind of thing. You know, and you're not, and we don't see, you have less of that right now. So if you maintained two OSs per year, you know, one was new features and one was enhancements that also get put into the next thing, you know, eventually, that could work. But, right now we haven't seen it. Like, it's totally possible where they can just do a year of just bug fixes and improvements. And, you know, there's so much going on, who would mind, but we just haven't seen them try to do that yet. So even though it's possible, there doesn't seem to be an appetite.
Yeah, because there's just so much market pressure for new stuff, new shiny stuff. And we begin with it too. Like, we can crash iOS 14 for having widgets and stuff. If we went through a year where they literally had nothing new, like even iOS 12, although it was like performance and stuff, they did have new stuff like screen time and things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and messages in iCloud was an iOS 12 thing. Maybe that was iOS 11. But it's a hard thing for a company to say, on all this pressure, when every single quarter you have to sell new products, say, look, we're not going to have anything we can put on an advert. We're just going to fix the bugs. Like, that's a hard thing.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Last thing I want to say for the week is promote some of the podcasts on the network. So, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. If you like the show, if you haven't subscribed yet, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, everywhere you can listen to a podcast.
You can watch on YouTube if you want to see the video version. Yeah.
YouTube every week around 4 p.m. on Thursdays at youtube.com/9to5Mac. But also check out our other podcasts. So if you go to 9to5Mac.com/podcast, you can find all the podcasts in the network. And so a couple of those I also do. Watch Time, which had a new episode out for the first time in I think a couple months. We got to talk to one of our colleagues, Miles, last week. That's out. And then Space Time is becoming the Space Explore podcast, mostly to compete with against PBS's Space Time series. And Serge, you can never find us versus them. And so we're just going to go with the name of the property with Space Explored. But we've been consistently doing those every week on Fridays on youtube.com/Space Explored, and then in Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, Google Podcast. So if you want to hear more of me, I'm in those other places as well. And you can follow me on Twitter at Apollo Zach. That's APOLLOZAC. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And if you have any feedback for the show, we love to get your feedback. We had some nice emails this past week, and that's awesome. You can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we'll see everyone next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.